Reporting on politics and public policy is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
You're in the moment. I'm Steve Zwemke. Chris Lawfrey and I are filling in for Lori Walsh today. Hawaiian Day creates havoc. Governor Noem looks to shut down Keystone protesters. And what's happening with legalized sports betting in South Dakota? The Dakota Political Junkies meet at this time every Wednesday to discuss the issues. And today we're joined by John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, how are things going up in Madison?
It's great here, Steve. Thanks for asking.
Cold and great, right? We also have Jonathan Ellis, investigative reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Jonathan, aloha.
Hey, I'm going to feel nice out today. I'm going to break out the sunscreen and try to get a little tan.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with aloha. We're going to start out right away here with the news from the University of South Dakota. And there actually is some breaking news here, as reported by our education reporter, Jackie Hendry. The Senate committee, of course, voted to revive the university's free speech bill on Monday amid controversy over a student party at USD that was renamed over concerns that it was culturally insensitive. The Student Bar Association at USD School of Law changed the name of Hawaiian Day to a themed party of Beach Day amid concerns that a fellow student said that Hawaiian Day was not inclusive. Now, Jackie Hendry reports that a formerly 7-plus page bill got amended down to 1.5 pages and passed out of the Senate State Affairs Committee 6-3 just a few moments ago. Jonathan, what can you tell us about where this is at right now?
That was probably the key vote. It's already passed through the House. Obviously, an amended version has to go back through. But I think that you had the Board of Regents who had been opposing this effort in the past. They were went ahead and testified in favor of it. Although, I think some lawmakers were skeptical that they were truly in favor of it. But it did pass, kind of a key vote. And I think one of the issues that I think that Republican lawmakers in particular are concerned about is that the university system is not promoting what they call intellectual diversity, and this would kind of require that the university systems report every year kind of what they've done to promote intellectual diversity. I think that South Dakota will probably be, from what I understand, probably be the first state in the country to have something like this in law.
Was there just some confusion in the Board of Regents policy in this case? Is it just something that had to be ironed out, and maybe this was what brought the Regents to this?
Are you talking about the Hawaiin Day deal?
Or? Yeah, yeah.
I think that probably had a role in this. The bill was the bill was originally defeated on last Wednesday, and that's about a day later or so, or that time is all this controversy over the Hawaiian Day name came out, so there were there was the question of whether the students had to rename this party because it wasn't inclusive, and then they were told that they should not hand out the flower garland lathed because that was considered culturally insensitive as well. So I think that probably had a role in this bill getting revived. And I think that various parties came to the table over the weekend and kind of, did what you do in politics and policy making. And they kind of, as Jackie alluded to, they boiled it down to the topics that they're most interested in and hammered out a kind of a compromise on the issue.
Yes.
With regard to the Hawaiian Day thing, it was international in terms of the coverage that came out of that.
Right.
And I got an email today from the chief of staff or a lawmaker in Hawaii saying that they were going to propose a South Dakota Day in their Hawaiian legislature, but then decided they couldn't because it wasn't inclusive because it didn't include North Dakota. So the joke's been on us.
That wasn't Mr. McDermott again, was it?
It was correct.
John, I know you've talked about this a lot in the past too, and Jonathan has already kind of alluded to it. There are some that say political correctness is running amok in a case like this. We mentioned the legislator from Hawaii, Mr. McDermott. He kind of shared those thoughts earlier in the week. What are your thoughts here?
Well, You're right. I have written a lot about it and spoken to various groups about this, that universities, which I think used to be a source of great debate and ideas and really disagreement about important topics, have changed dramatically, and the political correctness and the inclusivity is the word they're using at USD, has really, I think, hurt the universities across the country. The good news, I think, is that pendulum, I think, is starting to swing back. And this is, I think, really an example of that. When they've gone too far, they said, look, you have to have what are called trigger warnings, which is say, well, if I'm going to say something that might offend you, I have to tell you in advance that I might do that, so you can go, you know, pet a puppy or eat a warm cookie or something like this, so that you don't feel bad. And I think those are widely mocked and kind of bringing back to the center. So in terms of the Hawaiian Day, really what the investigation is about is, were there really administrators who said you can't pass out leis, and did the university interfere with some sort of free speech? And again, this is not protesting the Vietnam War. This is, I go back to my college parties. I can't remember how many we'd have to rename. I think all of them. I mean, you know, we had a golf party. Would we apologize to the golfers who who would be offended by us wearing knickers and carrying putters? So I think the pendulum really is swinging back, and whether it settles where everyone wants, it probably won't, because there are certainly people who are kind of offended by all sorts of references to ethnicity. And then we have the irony, of course, of the fact that we're in some cases promoting ethnicity and recognizing it and having Black History Month or something like this, and then other situations that if you say something about Black History Month, then you're offending someone else. So it probably won't be resolved quickly and easily, but I do think it's coming back toward the middle.
I remember being back at the University of Minnesota during the Reagan administration and seeing protests on campus almost every day, but I don't ever remember anything being violent. And I see things now that actually are turning violent, you know, people throwing eggs at speakers, things like that. There was an incident out in California, I believe, just last week, in which there was a couple of fists thrown. Are we turning more violent over the last few years, or what's going on with all this?
Well, the partisan, if you're asking me, the partisan hype that goes with these things has certainly accelerated, and I'm always surprised that it relates to whether you have a Republican or Democrat behind your name, but that these things seem to come down on those lines. But yes, I think the tenacity which students and faculty want to oppose free speech is remarkable to me. Again, there was a situation, I can't remember the university, I could look it up, but where students asked the administrators what Halloween costumes they should wear. And one of the administrators said, no, you guys should make that decision. And they completely flipped out. It said, no, the university administrators need to make the decision as to what Halloween costumes we wear. And so I just can't see students abdicating the right to speak freely or to dress freely or whatever those things. But it's very intense at some universities. I hope it doesn't result in any physical harm to people, but people are really into this topic.
Well, that brings me to the next question, too. Jonathan, in a case like this, does the person who made the original complaint have their name made public at any time? Because I could see problems with that.
You're talking about the person who complained about the name of the party?
Yes, yes.
I suspect that it would be easy to find out who that person is. I mean, I haven't tried to. I mean, I'm not involved, but I suspect that certainly the students know who it is, and it would become public. I can't imagine that officially, though. I mean, there are a lot of protections that go into student privacy and things like that. I will mention to you, though, you mentioned the egging and things like that. Mm-hmm. I will mention that Ezra Taft Benson back in the 1950s, who was Eisenhower's secretary for the Department of Education, was aide when he was in Sioux Falls on a visiting tour. So it's not that's not new. I think the newness, though, is actually in terms of people who you start equating speech to violence, and if you think that speech is violence, then that allows you then to be violent yourself. And so that's what I think we have to be careful of. Remember that speech is not necessarily violence.
Yeah, and this is a conversation we want to continue to on in the moment, and I'm sure we'll welcome both of you back for that. Let's move on to sports gambling, a measure proposed proposing that South Dakota voters should decide on legalized sports betting in Deadwood got some new life earlier this week after failing during a committee hearing. Is there hope left in Pierre, or will backers end up having to take signatures to a statewide vote? John Hunter.
I don't know how that will turn out. I think it's certainly possible. If I had to assign odds to it, I'd say it'd be more than 50-50 that they will have to gather signatures to do that, that the legislature would not forward that. But I'm wrong more than 50% of the time. I'm guessing what the legislature is going to do. But it's an issue, and I don't know how South Dakotans stand on it. Generally, we have been in favor of starting gambling, expanding gambling for the benefit of Deadwood and, in some cases, other parts of South Dakota. But I've always thought that sports gambling was a little different than games of chance where you're pulling a arm on a slot machine and oranges are turning up or random numbers from lottery, that if you have an event that is people are participating in, remember 100 years ago now, the Black Sox scandal kind of rocked the nation of gambling and baseball, and at that time, at least, they thought the solution, I think they were right, was to try to get gambling out of the national game. But if you have gambling on sports, I think there's the possibility of corruption where you'd be able to pay a player to shave a point here there, and if it comes down to maybe it's NFL games only, maybe what if it's college, what if it's South Dakota State, what if it's high school, what if it's Riggs High School and Pierre that you're betting on. I think it's a little different than Lotto and other such games of chance.
Yeah. You know, when the Supreme Court approved this, I was kind of hoping, you know, we see these video lottery former gas stations almost on every corner anymore. I was kind of hoping I could pop into one of those and put down a 20 on whoever's playing Minnesota on Sunday. But, you know, I'm not sure that's exactly what's going to happen. Jonathan, do you know if this would be restricted to like Deadwood or reservation casinos or what the restrictions would be?
Yeah, what they would like us to vote on is just restricting that to Deadwood and by extension then federal law the reservation casinos. Now, that's obviously what Deadwood wants. There are others who've talked about doing precisely what you've talked about, Steve, and that's being able to running sports betting through, for example, the South Dakota Lottery, mm-hmm. Where you would be able to place bets in terminals like that. So there are various views of how this should work. The proposal that we are, entertaining in the legislature, it would confine it to Deadwood. Now, I should point out that this is kind of an interesting. It was killed and then it got revived and sent to the floor. So it'll whether or not it can survive a floor vote is next, but. The governor has come out against it because it expands gambling, and so the governor is not in favor of this, and so that's have a powerful force against it. So the next day or two will be very interesting to see how this happens. But regardless, I think we're gonna vote on it one way or another, whether they do it the easy way through the legislature or gather enough signatures.
Okay. Well, Jonathan, does this kind of parallel the hemp issue that the legislature has been taking on this year in the fact that it's something like the hemp was approved in the Farm Bill, the sports gambling is something that was approved by the Supreme Court, yet the governor's office is kind of standing firm against those issues. Is there a parallel there at all?
Yeah, there is. I mean, both of these efforts would not have existed but for developments on the federal level. As you indicated, the Farm Bill included the hemp provisions, which the GOP Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted in. So you had that. And then, as you indicated, the sports betting was struck down as unconstitutional, the limitations on that 1992 law. So yeah, and interestingly, I mean, the governor opposed to both efforts, both here statewide to you know, include hemp and also sports betting.
Guys, I think we have time for just one more issue here. Let's go to the Keystone XL protests and the legislation through Governor Noem's office. She has proposed bills to create the pipeline engagement activity coordination expenses, as well as a second bill here that deals with Keystone XL. John, does this kind of stem from what we saw at the Dakota Access Pipeline, a way to prevent some of the expenses incurred there? Now, I know there's just a wide array of reporting on how much it costs to clean up there. I know they had a $1.1 million cleanup that was reported by the Army Corps of Engineers, but then when you look at some of the other reporting like oilprice.com and some of the media, they were saying total cleanup was in excess of $30 million. Is that kind of where the governor has originated this legislation?
Very much. I mean, that the North Dakota experience and you know, law enforcement costs, we don't often think about those kind of being associated with certain events like this. I mean, if you have a Super Bowl, there's some debate usually about, you know, who's going to cover law enforcement costs or even the Sturgis rally. But this is something that's kind of anticipating the possibility of it. It wouldn't necessarily happen. Don't know where it's going to happen along the pipeline, but clearly, North Dakota's experience is what is what's putting this kind of thing forward, and it's really faced, I think, at least as I understand it and read it, is entirely about the cost. It's not saying that you can't protest, which obviously would be unconstitutional, or you can't assemble peaceably and so forth. But if there is damage, who's going to pay for those? I think they try to cast that net as wide as they can. Say, okay, well, something happens, and it's going to be some of the expense. Certainly rioters would have bear some, local county would, state would, feds would, pipeline construction company would, the pipeline ownership, you know, they're trying to spread it as wide as they can so that not one organization. Right now, as I believe it's set up, is it would probably come to the county first, and some western counties, it would probably, that kind of expense would could break them. And then there is kind of a minimum amount that you meet, and then, you know, kind of state takes over from a certain point or reimburses some expenses. So, but yes, long answer to a short question, Steve, is that the North Dakota experience is what's causing us, and they're trying to get ahead of the game in case it happens here.
Yeah, and lastly, Jonathan, there's also the issue of free speech here. Governor Noem has mentioned outside groups organized by the likes of George Soros and some other outside groups. What about the free speech argument as it pertains to these bills?
Well, the ACLU and some others are concerned that this is going to prevent you know protests against these pipelines, which obviously are hugely controversial. And the Noem administration has said that this is, you know, this allows gives you know, the pipeline companies or others or third parties, it gives them an opportunity to sue groups, these outside groups that, as they say, cause riots. So it's going to be kind of it's sort of this gray area. What do you consider a riot? What do you consider, you know, protests, peaceful protests, like maybe, you know, things get out of hand? I mean, you know, so it's interesting. It's going to be an interesting development. I mean, I think these bills had their first hearings today, and they passed, I think, since we've been on the radio, their first votes. So it's interesting that they came up when they did. They just kind of emerged at the end of the session, so they have not had the sort of public vetting that other bills do. So that will be probably held against them by a lot of people. And certainly you're hearing then from the Native American community that they're very concerned about these bills as well.